I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today's subject, penis stealing in the Congo. About a month ago, a news story came out from the Democratic Republic of the Congo in Africa. The story read, "Police in the Congo have arrested 13 suspected sorcerers accused of using black magic to steal or shrink men's penises after a wave of panic and attempted lynchings triggered by the alleged witchcraft. Reports of so-called penis snatching are not uncommon in West Africa, where belief in traditional religions and witchcraft remains widespread, and where ritual killings to obtain blood or body parts still occur. Purported victims, 14 of whom were also detained by police, claim that sorcerers simply touched them to make their genitals shrink or disappear, in what some residents said was an attempt to extort cash with the promise of a cure. Kinshasa's police chief, Oliko, said, "You just have to be accused of that, and people will come after you. We've had a number of attempted lynchings. You see them covered in marks after being beaten." Well, this is very similar to the Salem witch burnings, the Inquisition in Europe, in which uncounted numbers of women were burned at the stake simply by being accused of witchcraft. And that's all you had to be, is accused. If someone didn't like you, someone had wanted to take revenge on you, all they had to do was accuse you of witchcraft. There was no trial. There was no evidence presented. There was nothing except torture. The torture was designed to get you to confess. But it didn't matter whether you confessed or not. The end was going to be burning at the stake. And by the time the torture was done, the victim was begging to be burned at the stake and have an end put to their torture. Getting back to the Congo, this is not a new story. Many African nations, including Ghana in 1996 and Benin in 2001, and many others, have had exactly this same type of witchcraft accusation. It makes a great excuse to kill your enemies. One thing that the victims have been doing since this mass hysteria has been spreading is to protect themselves. They are walking around with a Bible in their pants. That's right. They stick a Bible down into their crotch to protect them. Actually, that would probably work if someone was going to hit you or kick you in the groin. It would probably give you some protection. Much like a martial arts cup. As far as protecting you against sorcery, I don't really understand how that works. I mean, if you want to be protected from witchcraft, I suppose God should be doing that for you if you ask him to. I don't know why you would need... Maybe God told them to put the Bible in their pants, although I don't know why that would be necessary. Getting back to witchcraft... The height of witchcraft lasted about 400 years. This went on from the Middle Ages in the 1400s, through the Renaissance in the 1500s, through the Enlightenment in the 1600s, and all the way to the end of the 1700s, before witches finally were no longer executed. And that brings up the question. The Bible says, do not suffer a witch to live. The Bible directs the killing of witches. So why did Christians start disobeying the Bible in the early 1800s? Why did they allow witches to live in direct contradiction to the Bible? I don't have an answer for that. However, I'm really happy that they quit doing that. That was really nice of them to stop burning innocent women. And some men were also burned as witches. Male witches are often referred to as sorcerers. But they did not escape the burning stake either. But as in most societies and in most cases, it's usually women that suffer the brunt of it. innocent, poor women tortured and murdered by the countless thousands. And the church sent out inquisitors during, that's why they call it the Inquisition. And they were paid, I think it was 20 shillings per head for every executed witch. So they had a motivation to kill. Not only were they paid by the head, they also divided up the property of the victim. So there was a lot to gain. This was one of the worst periods in European and in American history. The accusation of witchcraft not only is used to kill enemies, to take revenge on people you don't like, it also is a great excuse to abandon unwanted children. This is a practice that apparently is common in Africa, but I doubt that's the only place they do it. By accusing the children of witchcraft and hurting the family, they are merely defending themselves by abandoning the children. These children probably have physical disabilities, probably they're autistic, or for some other reason they're a burden to the family, and this makes a perfect excuse to abandon them to their own means of survival. Now let's go into a little more in-depth the psychology behind witchcraft. Whatever the psychological basis for the creation of an anti-church, with witches and sorcerers joined with Satan to mock and desecrate the symbols and rituals of the church, the practical result was a stronger, more powerful church. What a surprise. No one knows how many witches, heretics, or sorcerers were tortured or burned at the stake by the pious. But the fear generated by the medieval and Spanish Inquisitions must have affected nearly all in Christendom. Being accused of being a witch was as good as being convicted. To deny it was to prove your guilt. Of course a witch will say she is not a witch and that she does not believe in witchcraft. Throw her in the river. If she sinks and drowns, that will prove she is not a witch. If she swims, we will know the devil is assisting her. Pull her out and burn her to death, for the church does not like bloodshed. In truth, the church ran a reign of terror, superior in many ways to those of Stalin and Hitler. Obviously, in terms of absolute numbers terrorized or killed, Stalin and Hitler far surpassed the church. But their terrors lasted only a few years and were restricted to limited territories. The church's terror lasted for several centuries and extended to all of Christendom. The cruelties and delusions went on for centuries. Witch hunting was not abolished in England until 1682. The hunt spread to America, of course, and in 1692 in Salem, Massachusetts, 19 witches were hanged. In 1711, 20 years later, the Massachusetts state legislature exonerated all but 6 of the accused witches. Well, my question is, why not the other 6? Obviously, they still believed in witches, which is not surprising since many people today still believe in witches. The last judicial execution for witchcraft in Europe took place in Poland in 1793, when 2 old women were burned. A wizard, however, died as a result of an unofficial ordeal by water in England almost a century later in 1865, and in 1900, 2 Irish peasants tried to roast a witch over her own fire. Well, there's a couple of real brain surgeons. The last subject I'm going to touch on is Wicca. A good general rule seems to be that there is no single set of beliefs or practices which constitutes Wicca, though one belief seems to recur. If it harms no one, do what you will. Finally, it should be noted that Wicca is not related to Satan worship. Okay, one thing that I was thinking about adding to the show, maybe on a weekly basis, is to include some famous skeptical quotes. Albert Camus, quote, "Seeking what is true is not seeking what is desirable. And as a comment on that quote, in case you don't get the point, it has to do with the difference between the way an irrational person thinks as compared to how a rational person thinks. The irrational mind seeks what is desirable, what they want to believe, and they seek evidence which supports what they want to believe. The rational mind discards what is desirable and seeks what is true, whether it is desirable or not. I now have a series of quotes from Albert Einstein. He's a pretty quotable guy. Everyone was writing down everything he said. And here are some of the quotes I've taken from him that I think are very skeptically correct. Quote, "I do not believe in immortality of the individual, and I consider ethics to be an exclusively human concern, with no superhuman authority behind it." And that could be directed towards our Christian friends who continually try to claim that he is a Christian simply because of his stature as an intellectual. In his time, he was lambasted quite harshly for his views on religion. As time has passed, people have forgotten about that, and all they want to do is use him as an appeal to authority. That last quote pretty much sums up how he believed. And I've got more from Albert. Quote, "A man's ethical behavior should be based effectually on sympathy, education, social ties, and needs. No religious basis is necessary. Man would indeed be in a poor way if he had to be restrained by fear of punishment and hope of reward after death." And that's why people who use the reason that morality comes from the Bible have to really scare you, because if they need 10 commandments to keep them from raping and murdering and stealing, is this really someone you want for a neighbor? I don't need anything like that to keep me from doing those things. People learn right from wrong when they're a little kid, or they don't learn it. But they don't need a Bible or 10 commandments to teach them that. India and China never had access to a Bible. Or if they did, they didn't pay much attention to it, judging by the percentage of Christianity in those countries. And they don't have any higher rates of crime. In fact, isn't it odd that they have lower rates of crime? Let's move along to Albert's next quote. "I don't try to imagine a personal God. It suffices to stand in awe at the structure of the world, insofar as it allows our inadequate senses to appreciate it." And that quote is pointing out that with religion, you miss everything that science is revealing. All of the stuff that you're taught in religion pales in comparison to the incredible things that science has opened up. Unfortunately, religious people will not allow themselves to accept science, since science slaughters everything that religion preaches. Every time they go head-to-head, science wins. It never loses to religion. It always wins. And that's why religious people fight so hard against science, because they don't want to give up their beliefs, no matter what evidence and proof is produced by science. And they miss out on things that are far more wonderful than all that crap that they're fed out of their Bibles. Albert Einstein also said, quote, "It was, of course, a lie what you read about my religious convictions, a lie which is being systematically repeated. I do not believe in a personal God, and I have never denied this, but have expressed it clearly. If something is in me which can be called religious, then it is the unbounded admiration for the structure of the world, so far as our science can reveal it." Just to bring logic into this discussion for a minute, using Albert Einstein as an appeal to authority is a mistake anyway, because Einstein was not a theologian. He was a physicist. He doesn't have expertise about God or religion. To try to use him to support your beliefs and say he was on your side doesn't mean much. Most people in the field of theology are going to be much more knowledgeable than Einstein about such things. He was concerned with mathematics, physics, and other branches of science. He was not trained in theology. Albert Einstein also said, quote, "I have never imputed to nature a purpose or a goal, or anything that could be understood as anthropomorphic. What I see in nature is a magnificent structure that we can comprehend only very imperfectly, and that must fill a thinking person with a feeling of humility. This is a genuinely religious feeling that has nothing to do with mysticism." Another quote, Albert Einstein, "The idea of a personal God is quite alien to me and seems even naive." Continuing, Albert Einstein, "If people are good only because they fear punishment and hope for reward, then we are a sorry lot indeed." I have to agree with that. Albert Einstein, quote, "All our science, measured against reality, is primitive and childlike, and yet it is the most precious thing we have." I have two more quotes from Albert. "Intellectual growth should commence at birth and cease only at death." I think this is a good description of the skeptical mind. A skeptic never ceases trying to learn everything he or she can because it is part of the way we think. And finally, the last quote from Albert Einstein, "No amount of experiments can ever prove me right. A single experiment may at any time prove me wrong." And that is similar to what Charles Darwin said about his theory of evolution. When he was asked about what it would take to disprove his theory, he said that no matter how much was discovered that supported his theory, all it would take was one piece of evidence against evolution to bring the whole thing down. That's how science works.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.